Do we really need a federal budget?
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Tuesday, the 11th of March. And Republican Congressman Paul Ryan unveiled his federal spending plan today in Washington. It contains many of the same proposals Republicans offered before the election, including lower taxes and less spending.
We match revenues with expenditures. So our budget matches the spending with our income, just like every family and business must do throughout America.
Now, if history is any guide, Mr. Ryan's budget plan probably will not be acceptable to Democrats, just as their budget probably will not be acceptable to Republicans. So we may end up without a budget for another year, which raises the question of whether we need one in the first place. Marketplace's Scott Tong joins us from Washington to discuss. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Okay, so I know we are supposed to have a budget every year. Why don't we have one right now?
Well, shocking as it may sound to you, Jeremy, the process broke down in this town.
Shocking.
Normally, here, which is several years ago, the White House sends its blueprint to Congress early in the year. Congress has its own ideas. They take all these, they hash them out. It goes through the legislative sausage machine. Both chambers vote on a budget, and voila, by October 1st, the start of the federal fiscal year, we have money going out the door. But we've not had that in the last few years, and so we get to run on emergency crisis spending.
Well, so we've been able to make it by. It hasn't been pretty necessarily, but it's worked okay. Do we need a federal budget?
Well, worked okay. Okay. Without a budget, you get today's reality show that is Washington. Without a budget, you have a possibility of shutting down the government. We've seen that. Or without a budget, you pass temporary spending bills a few months at a time. We're seeing that now. And in a poison political environment, you get these self-imposed deadlines to get everyone's act together, which, of course, failed. And we're living through this forced spending cut program called the sequester. In other words, you get dysfunction. I spoke this morning to Republican consultant Tony Fratto. He worked in the press office of President George W. Bush. And he says, when the budget machine seizes up, Washington really doesn't have a good plan B.
There's no way to really compel Congress to do a budget, to produce a budget resolution, to get together and to do that. It's not in our structure of government right now. And it's the founding fathers did a lot of things right. This is one thing that they got wrong.
And so, Jeremy, we have what we have now.
So, Scott, is there any chance that the budget that Paul Ryan proposes today or one from Democrats will actually become law?
Well, there's always a chance. Right now, by the political reactions, the chances, the smart money seems to think the chances are pretty low. But, you know, as we get to say, we'll see what happens.
Marketplace's Scott Tong in Washington. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Today, the Senate Banking Committee will consider President Obama's pick to head the Securities and Exchange Commission. Mary Jo White was a former federal prosecutor, but she was also a private defense attorney who has represented the very institutions she'd be policing, which means if she gets the job, she may be recusing herself from some cases. Marketplace's David Weinberg reports.
The SEC is made up of five members. So if Mary Jo White has to recuse herself, that would leave four votes.
So to the extent that there's a 2-2 tie, that could very much hamper the commission's ability to prosecute cases.
Robert Heim is a former assistant regional director at the SEC. He says that most SEC prosecutions are unanimous votes.
However, there can be controversial cases or cases that are closer questions that could be impacted by White's requirement to recuse herself from voting.
But St. John's University law professor Michael Perino says there's a much bigger obstacle to prosecuting individuals for their involvement in the 2008 financial crisis.
The simple fact is that time is fast running out.
The Supreme Court just ruled that financial crimes cannot be prosecuted more than 5 years after they were committed.
For anything that happened in 2008, we're almost out of time, no matter how much Mary Jo White wants to pursue these cases.
White will no doubt have to answer questions about her close ties to the financial industry when her confirmation hearing begins later today. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
Well, according to the latest numbers from the Census Bureau, if your commute to work is less than an hour and a half each way, consider yourself lucky because 600,000 of your fellow Americans spend more than 90 minutes getting to work. Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports.
The average commute time is about half an hour. For about 8% of us, that drive to work takes a whole hour. And for the fewer than 1% of us the census calls mega commuters, poor mega commuters, one way to work is 90 minutes. And 50 miles. A long, long time. New York trader Pete Silvestri is hustling to catch his train home, 55 miles away in Fairfield, Connecticut.
It's got a beach, it's got great schools, a lot cheaper taxes than New York.
And Silvestri is pretty much the type of person that makes these mega commutes. Allison Fields is with the Census Bureau. She says they often work in fields like management and business.
They also tend to have a higher salary than the average commuter. They tend to be male, and they tend to be sort of in the prime working age.
But, she says,
you know, it's still not anywhere near as prevalent as people might think.
These mega commuters are outliers. James Moore is a transportation engineer at USC.
Everybody's different. Some of those differences add up to some fairly unusual behaviors.
And as for the perception that we're all wasting so much more time getting to work these days, something I kind of thought was true, Moore says nope.
Typically, commuting lengths have been very, very stable in terms of time for the better part of a century.
We just go further in the same amount of time. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Well, over the years, I've had a lot of different commutes. Right now, mine is just a few minutes long, although at its worst, I was living in Bethesda, Maryland, commuting to Washington, D.C., and it was something like 45 minutes on the metro. Well, you can go to our interactive map. You can put in your zip code and find out the average commute time where you live and see how it compares to the rest of the country. That is at marketplace.com. .org. And finally, to the village of Dixmoor, Illinois, outside of Chicago, where Wendy Casey is running for village president, and so is her 27-year-old son, Randall. Well, according to the Chicago Tribune, Wendy says Randall is too bossy. Randall responds by saying that that's leadership. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.